This is Friday on the Other Side on Mind Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Pamela Brewer. Mind Talk is the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. And on Fridays, we take a look at experiences and concepts that you might not think have a mental health component, but in fact, they do.
Today's guest, Dr. Nicolette Martin, is the author of What You Eat, Choosing Foods That Will Change Your Life. Now, I know your head's spinning because you're thinking this is a relationship and mental health program. But in fact, what you eat, how you eat, has a great deal to do on your psychological well-being. And we're going to learn all about all of that today as we meet Dr. Nicolette Martin. Dr. Martin, welcome to Mind Talk.
Thank you so much, and good morning, everyone.
It is very nice to have you with us today. Now, I want to get started from the beginning. As you just heard me say, this is a relationship and mental health program. Well, actually, it's a mental health program because our mental health affects everything. And yet, I'm talking to you about food. Why? What do you see as the relationship between food and mental health?
Oh, there's definitely a direct relationship between food and health. And actually, the title of the book is called Love What You Eat, Choosing Foods That Will Change Your Life. Those little vegetables there say love.
They do indeed.
So actually, if you love what you eat, if you eat well and you eat healthy, it definitely will affect your physical health and absolutely will affect your mental health in terms of depression, in terms of sleep, in terms of other illnesses. So there is a direct correlation. You're absolutely right.
All right. Let's start from the beginning. Let's talk about some of the myths that people tell themselves about weight loss and weight management. One of them is that I can't lose weight. I'm too old. I've been eating this way for too long. I am what I am. I'm just stuck, and I'm okay with being stuck. What do you say to that?
Well, I think people that say I'm okay with being stuck probably really aren't okay with being stuck.
Okay.
And they need to look at it from a different perspective. It's true. A lot of people have been doing what they've been doing because they learned it from their grandmother, and she learned it from her mother and her mother, etc. But in different times, there were times when, you know, people could eat bacon and eggs every day and they wouldn't have high cholesterol and they wouldn't have diabetes. But that's because they were more physical. They worked on the farm and they worked in the land. They didn't sit in front of computers. They didn't sit and watch reality TV. So this is a whole different ballgame. And so you have to treat it like a whole different ballgame. And you can't just say, well, my grandmother did it, so I'm going to do it. And I think once you, if you step back and say, I really want to change and I need to know how, then this book will help you do that.
Now, you've said, you know, a couple of really important words, really want. There are many people who really want to change and really don't know how, don't believe they can, or maybe don't believe they deserve to change. When it comes to how we use food in our emotional lives, you've got some really interesting perspectives about food, about primary foods and secondary foods. What are primary foods from your perspective?
Well, the term primary foods was coined by actually one of my instructors, Joshua Rosenthal, and it is a very big, powerful part of why we do what we do when it comes to our relationship with food. And primary foods are really the primary aspects of our life. So it has nothing to do with the type of food that you eat. It has to do with other things that influence your daily life and the way you think and the way you act and the way you react. So it's your relationships, whether they be with a spouse or a partner. It's your relationships with your family, with your coworker. It's your financial relationships. It's your spiritual relationships. It's your physical well-being. It's your mental well-being. It's the whole package. And most people, they don't stop to think, like, why is comfort food called comfort food?
Right.
It's because when you're sad or when your heart is, quote-unquote, broken, you go and you eat because it makes you feel good. And sugar and fat make you feel good, albeit temporary, but they make you feel good. And so if you focus on those primary foods and try to get those parts of your life in order, then you'll start to see that I don't want to say crutch, but I don't need to reach out for the cookies and the candy because, okay, I'm feeling upset, I'm feeling stressed, I'm going to go for a walk instead of reaching for the junk food. I'm going to maybe go to the gym or go to a yoga class. You know, you start small and you build up. But the key is to focus on those primary foods, figure out what's out of whack, why it's out of whack, and how you can fix that or at least rein it in. And then other things will start to fall in place, meaning the secondary foods or the things that you actually eat will start to change.
So as we're going through our conversation today, I really want to encourage the audience to think about primary foods as the relationships in our life and how we relate to those relationships and whether or not those things in your life are feeding you. What I'm hearing you say, Dr. Martin, is that if they're feeding you well and you're embracing them, then what you do with the secondary foods, what you do with the substances that you put in your mouth is very different.
You're absolutely correct, yes.
All right. Let's talk about some of the myths that you, some other of the myths that you talk about. And maybe they're not myths, but let's talk about the production of meat. You say, because a lot of people are still in the meat and potatoes world. And you say that producing truly safe meat is costly and that the industry fights any legislation that would increase the cost or help the consumer. Say more about that.
Well, I think that's any industry, whether it's the meat industry or the sugar industry. I mean, the people that make, you know, cookies and candies and potato chips, they're not going to, you know, that's their livelihood, just like anything else.
Right.
So if someone challenges that for whatever reason, the bottom line is they have stockholders that they're beholden to, and they have to make a profit for their company. So anytime you challenge their, so to speak, way of life, you're always going to get kicked back. Now, I personally don't eat meat, but I'm not telling everybody that they need to be a vegetarian or they need to be a vegan. So if you're going to eat meat, and some people may need to eat meat, you need to try to eat the healthiest brand of meat that you possibly can. And if you can look at, there's tons of different studies, there's movies out, there's a wonderful movie called Food, Inc., which really shows how these animals are actually treated and the hormones that they're pumped up with. Of course, you want to make them bigger and fatter so you get more money when you go to sell them. But then what does that do to the consumer that eats all those hormones? What does that do to the consumer that eats pesticides or antibiotics that are plugged into animals? So we're suffering on our end in order for them to make a bigger buck at the sale.
Well, what are some of the impact on the individual of eating meat that has been pumped with hormones, for example?
Well, there are a number of studies that show that those hormones, for example, in our younger children, are leading to much earlier development, especially in young girls.
Huh.
They're starting their periods earlier. They're larger breast size. They're gaining weight faster, as well as there are different cancers that have been linked to these hormones, especially in women in terms of breast cancer, men in terms of prostate and colon cancer. So they can have a deleterious effect down the road. Now, you may not see it for 10, 20, 30 years,
mm-hmm.
but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And the science is out there to back it up.
And so clearly, I mean, the short story is you're eating what the animals are eating.
Exactly.
And you may not exactly know what it is that they're eating, but you can pretty much bet that it's going to have an impact on you.
Right. I mean, it has to. It has, you know, where are the pesticides, where are the hormones going to go? Where are the antibiotics going to go? They go into the animal, they fatten the animal up, then they go into the human that eats the animal.
And then they fatten the human up. You talk about, one of the things that's interesting to me about your book is that you actually name names. You talk about large companies this is not exclusive to these companies, but includes such companies as Nestle's, Kellogg's, Hershey's. You know, some of folks' favorite companies when it comes to the production of what we consider to be sweets and goodies. And you say that they use science to determine a bliss point. What is a bliss point in food?
A bliss point is sort of just what it sounds like. It's something to make you, the consumer, feel good. And so if you talk about how much sugar, how much fat to put in a certain product that's going to make, A, the patient feel good, again, your comfort food,
mm-hmm.
B, it will be something like the old commercial, you can't eat just one. Why is it that you can't eat just one? Okay.
They planned it that way, right?
And it starts to taste that good. And there, again, there's a lot of science behind the fact that sugar is addictive. Just like caffeine, just like coffee, just like gambling, sugar can be very addictive. So once you start down that road, then you're just going to want more and more and more. And companies know that, so they want to make sure that whatever that is, that's where we need to get the consumer.
So for the person who has the tendency to go for the sweets, for example, when they're feeling sad, they're going to go for more and more because that's the design.
Right. And the different sugars are going to cause the production of certain hormones like serotonin, which is a feel-good hormone. And I'm sure this is a mental health show, so you know if you have people who are depressed or have anxiety, or I should say at least depression, a lot of them are put on antidepressant medications.
Right.
Some of those antidepressant medications have what are called serotonin reuptake inhibitors. So you keep the serotonin around longer as opposed to your body breaking it down.
Well, let me ask you this. Let's say you're on a medication like that. Let's say you're on an antidepressant, and then you decide that you're sad and you want to go have a box of cookies. What's the impact?
The short-term impact will be, I feel great. I feel relaxed. I feel happy. I feel comforted. And then you get the sugar high,
mm-hmm.
and then comes the sugar crash. And now I'm grumpy again, and I'm sleepy, and I'm cranky. So if you're someone who's at work, and you get that sugar high, and then you start to crash, then that's when you usually reach for the 2 or 3 o'clock, you know, third cup of coffee, or you reach for more sugar, because I want to get that high again, because now I'm feeling slow and sluggish and not so good, whereas a half an hour ago, I felt great, and I was up, and I was happy. So again, the medications don't necessarily work like that, obviously, and I'm sure you know that.
Right.
There is no, you know, up and down and that type of thing, no high and a crash, but it's the same concept. It makes you feel better. It makes you more alert. It makes you less anxious. It makes you less sad. And so you're able to hopefully function better. But with sugar, it's much different. It's an up and then it's a down.
And in fact, you don't function better. You wind up feeling worse and functioning less.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Well, that's not a pretty picture that we're painting of excess sugar.
No, and it's very unfortunate because there are millions of people in this country who are actually addicted to sugar. And it's one thing to say, oh, you know, I like sugar. Yeah, I can eat a cookie now and then. And people don't think of it as an addiction because it, you know, it doesn't lead to crime. You don't
right.
get arrested. It's not illegal. But in fact, there are people who really crave sugar, just like some people crave alcohol or they crave different drugs.
Folks, you are listening to Nicolette Martin, the author of Love What You Eat, Choosing Foods That Will Change Your Life. This is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk, and we'll be right back. Hi, folks. This is Pamela Brewer. We're back, and we continue the conversation with Dr. Nicolette Martin, who was author of Love What You Eat, Choosing Foods That Will Change Your Life. Just before the break, we were talking about something called the bliss point. And as I think about that, Dr. Martin, you know, there's so much shame that many people have around food and how much they do or don't eat. And I think if we can all remind ourselves that companies actually spend time and energy and money into determining what it will take to create the need for you to eat more or the belief that you need to eat more, that takes away a little bit of the edge of the shame and the blame. This is not about you having a weak, quote unquote, personality. It's about you having done exactly what these large companies have paid, dare say, millions of dollars to help you do.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you shouldn't always, you know, now I believe in personal responsibility, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But people do have to understand that this is a very expensive, high-stakes game. And things, you know, there's a reason that the cookies are right at eye level when you go down the aisle. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, the healthier things are down lower, on the lower shelf. So if you don't happen to look there, you're going to go for what you see. There are a number of companies that specifically go in and design grocery stores in a specific way. And, you know, they'll put things that are less healthy, from my perspective, mm-hmm. at eye level and right, very easily accessible. And they'll put everything else maybe around the outer edges of the store or on the lower edges of the store. So it takes a little more effort to find those things. And you have to go in knowing that this is what I want and I'm going to go look for those things.
So you really have to, when you walk into a grocery store, you kind of have to be armed with self-awareness in order to be able to help yourself make the choices that make better sense for you.
That's right. Absolutely. You have to go in with a purpose and a focus. And by all means, don't go hungry. That's the number one rule. Never go grocery shopping when you're hungry.
That was my next question.
Oh, yes. That's always detrimental. And it's hard to lose that fight because then you just come out with a whole bunch of stuff that you probably never would have bought and would never eat. But yes, you really have to pay attention. You have to be mindful when you're shopping. And you have to look for things that you know, this is what I want. And let's start with the apples and the bananas and the greens and the kale. Let's start in the vegetable aisle, okay? And if you can kind of get yourself away from the focus of the processed foods in the middle of the store, then I think it's a little bit easier. So to stay on the edges, don't go towards the center.
So, in fact, people, not only are companies paying money to find out how much of the salt and the sugar they need to put in their products to create an addictive experience, but they're also putting money into where the products should physically be in the store to entice you. They're also putting money clearly into the ads that they're using to sell the foods to you. They're putting money into the packaging that they're using to get the foods to the store. It just sounds like a huge money pit, quite frankly.
And, well, it's not really a money pit for them because that's the way that they have been so successful. I mean, you know, marketing is an ingenious thing. And they pay millions and millions of dollars for marketers to, like you were just mentioning, how they advertise on TV, how they advertise to children. They did the same thing with cigarettes. They're doing the same thing with food, how they market to adults, you know, late at night, things like that. So it's a big business. And unfortunately, I think they're winning in some aspects.
So the money pit is really to the individual that's falling into all of that because they do a good job. They really do a good job. Talk about the brain and how it is and why it is that these foods that you're eating actually have an impact on the brain. I know that we know that, but I think in a lot of ways we don't know it enough, if that makes sense.
Well, a lot of it deals with hormones and triggers. So again, with the, for example, going back to the comfort foods and the sweets and, you know, the fats, like there's a reason that, you know, when they take trans fats out of foods, they don't taste as good. Now, granted, they're much better for you, but they don't taste as good because you're, whether it's the saturated fats or the sugar, those spark different hormones, things like serotonin, again, which we can call the feel-good hormone, for lack of a better description.
Okay.
And dopamine, they give you energy, they make you feel good, they make you feel happy. And those are real triggers in the brain. So that's not something that the individual can control. That is what it is. But these are just ways to trigger those hormones, trigger that production. But then, like you were saying before, you go up and then you come down with a sugar crash.
Let's talk about we've been talking about sugar, clearly. Let's talk about the long-term effects of excessive sugar consumption. What are they? What should we be aware of?
Well, there's an entire gamut. I sort of at the start, it's whether you begin craving sugar and become addicted to sugar, which, again, leads you down the road to more and more processed foods.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, sugar in whole foods, apples, bananas, carrots, things like that, that type of sugar is fantastic. You want to get hooked on that type of sugar, it's the best kind.
Go for it.
But go for it, absolutely.
Right.
But when you start to get towards the boxes and the bags and the things in processed foods, then you can get addicted to sugar. You start to, obviously, most people will start to gain weight. That can progress to what's called metabolic syndrome. And metabolic syndrome is a compilation of high blood pressure, diabetes, a BMI over 30, which is the body index measuring fat. And you get to the point where now you have increased your risk for heart attack. You've increased your risk for stroke. We now have children who have what we used to call adult onset diabetes. Now we find that in 10, 12, 13-year-olds who have gained so much weight that they have the characteristics of adult onset diabetes at such a young age. So the sugar can lead to all of those things, progressing into the metabolic syndrome, again, increasing your risk for heart attack and stroke. And it can also lead to a number of cancers.
A number of cancers.
Yes, the processed foods and the sugar in all these processed foods has been found in many studies to link to, now, again, let me be clear, there is not a direct link between a Twinkie and breast cancer.
Okay.
I'm not saying that at all.
Okay.
However, excess sugar over years and years causing more and more inflammation in the body, because that's what these sugars do. They cause inflammation by producing certain what we call cytokines, and that can lead to tissue destruction, disruption of different cells, and down the line possibly progress to changes in the cell matrix and different cancers, whether it's breast cancer, prostate cancer, colon cancer. So in the long run, it's damaging all the way around.
And what are some of the emotional impacts of excess sugar?
Well, a lot of people, again, depression, sluggishness. And if you start to go down that roller coaster, then you get the weight gain. And
okay.
Then you don't want to exercise. And then you start to develop, you know, more arthritis type symptoms because now you're overweight and you're breaking down your joints. And so that's going to lead to more depression, possibly more anxiety.
Okay.
You know, you're definitely not going to sleep well. If you don't sleep well, you get more depressed. If you get more depressed, you don't sleep well.
So it's a vicious cycle.
Right, right.
What about memory and cognitive functions? Are they impacted by excess sugar?
I would probably say yes. You're going to be, especially if you're at work and you go for that 3 o'clock whatever, Twinkies, piece of cake, how are you going to feel? Initially, you're going to have that up, and then you have your crash, and you're sluggish, you're slower, you think slower, you're more drowsy, so you're just not productive. At the end of the day, you're just not productive, and you don't get things done, and then you don't feel well, and you don't feel well about yourself, and you don't feel well like, ugh, I'm just like a blob on the couch, that sort of feeling.
So what you're saying is that the long-term effects of too much sugar can include not only the physical difficulties that you've talked about and sort of inflammation in the body, which is certainly not a good thing, but it can also assist you in getting to a place where you're depressed, where your memory is impaired, where your cognitive functionings are impaired, where you're not able to concentrate as well, and where you're just feeling sluggish, not only physically, but emotionally.
That's right. Absolutely. And that just becomes, you know, a vicious cycle. And it's not easy to break that cycle, but it can be done. And it's just about a lifestyle change. It's not about a diet. It's not about starving yourself. It's just about a lifestyle change. One food at a time is what my book talks about, changing one food at a time, one aspect at a time. And you didn't gain 100 pounds in a week. You're right. Not going to lose it in a week.
Right.
But if you just do it step by step, one food at a time, start to change your lifestyle, and then you'll start to see starting to change the primary foods as well as the secondary foods, and that's the way you get things to fall in place.
And I think about the primary foods, certainly relationships is a primary food. And again, if that relationship is such that you find yourself looking to go to the sugars, the salts, whatever, then your job is to not go to the sugars and the salts, which aren't going to change the relationship. It's really to work on, to the extent that you can, what's going on in the relationship.
Yes, you have to find the reason that the relationship's not working, or the relationship that your finances aren't intact, or the reason that physically you don't feel good or you're overweight, and start to work on those things. Let me take a walk instead of sitting in front of the TV after dinner, okay? Let me figure out what is it about, do I want to be in this relationship with this other person? If I do, how can we fix our problems? If I don't, how can I get out?
Okay. And that's often easier said than done, but the context in which you're putting it says that it is very much a part of saving your life.
It's absolutely. At the end of the day, it is about saving your own life. And all of those things impact your life.
You give the example of, and again, you name names, you give the example of Starbucks, and you're not very happy with them, it seems like, with some of their more exotic drinks. And you say, do you really want to spend, you know, $5, for example, $5 to $10 on a treat or a cup of Starbucks when you can use that $5 to $10 to do something that's really healthy for you?
And I think it's all about putting it in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be the last person to tell people to boycott Starbucks. But do you really need a venti caramel mocha frappuccino every day? Really? Every day? And so that's where you start thinking about mindful eating. Can I do that once a week? Absolutely. Absolutely. But instead of going cold turkey and never walking into Starbucks again, how about we go in and say, let me try a medium-sized mocha frappuccino.
Okay.
And then maybe next week, okay, let me try a small. And so, again, you're not giving up. I don't believe in deprivation of any kind, because that just makes you obsess over the thing that you're denying yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that has, as you know, many psychological implications, and you end up failing at the end of the day. So I'm just saying, if you try to pare down, don't deny yourself, but let's pare down and go slowly. Change your venti drink to a medium, to a grande, and then to a small, and that's okay. And you'll say, well, okay, I'm still getting the little buzz and a little kick and the good taste, but you know, now instead of, 400 calories, maybe now it's 150 calories.
That's a huge difference.
And that's a huge difference.
Love what you eat, choosing foods that will change your life. We will continue our conversation with Dr. Martin in just a moment, so you stay where you are. Let's continue our discussion about foods and relationships and what we do to ourselves, hopefully by the end of this hour, not unknowingly. Dr. Martin, you talk in the book about, and now I'm talking about meat again, but it may extend beyond that, I don't know, but about laws that actually, there are 13 states, I believe, that have laws that do what in terms of meat?
I believe these different states, they talk about some restrictions regarding the use of some antibiotics and hormones for certain meats and certain products. And I don't know the name of the states offhand, I think that... I'm sorry, go ahead.
There are also some states that actually restrict you saying bad things about meats, aren't there?
And there are as well. There are certain states that will prevent you from coming out against the meat industry, coming out against the dairy industry. And I think for some reason the meat industry may just have stronger lobbyists.
Okay.
And, you know, as we all know, we saw what happened to Oprah
right.
years ago when she came out against the cattle industry. Just saying, you know, her personal bias was that she was not going to eat a certain type of meat or something like that. And there was a firestorm. Now, granted, you know, she's Oprah, so I can understand or I assume that that's why they went after her. But, yeah, there really are some states that have very strong lobbies in terms of what you can say about them and what you can't in terms of the meat industry.
I find that really just fascinating that so much money is spent on keeping the truth hidden.
And they're very good at it, even though there's science behind things that people say regarding the hormones and regarding the antibiotics. So this isn't just, you know, other people saying, oh, I disagree with you. There's science, papers, experiments. There's just true information, real information, saying this is what happens when you do this. How can you be allowed to get away with this without the consumer knowing?
Right.
And at the very least, why don't you give the consumer the opportunity to know this information and let them make a choice for themselves?
Is there a place that consumers can go to get the kind of information that you're talking about? Is there a resource that you can think of that would be useful to consumers?
The FDA, going on websites, for example, like government websites, they'll give them information. But I would say the internet is a very powerful tool.
Mm.
So going to, again, I mentioned the movie called Food Inc.
Okay.
And I don't remember the producer's name of that movie, but that's a very real, very, very disturbing movie about what actually happens in the meat industry. And you can go online and get resources from their website. You can even see the movie. And so there are a number of different sites like that, that people that show the other side, you know, they take the risk and they show the other side. I believe they used hidden cameras and things like that, but it's very disturbing. So I will tell your listeners, it's a very disturbing movie, but you can at the very least go to their website and get more information about things like that.
When you say that it's a disturbing movie, now I got to ask you, what's so disturbing about the movie? I have
to. In terms of the cruelty and the way that the animals are treated, in terms of, you know, you see them getting the hormones or getting the antibiotics and getting shots, but then you see animals that are sick or that are hurt and that are beaten.
Mm.
And all of these things obviously affect hormones that the animal produces,
right.
Stress hormones and things like that. And yet, again, this is the meat that we're eating. You see, you know, chickens that are 10 chickens in a coop, and they're just stuffed in there, and they never get out. They never see sunlight. They never get to walk on the grass. They're just all stuffed. They can't lay down. They can't sit down. There's feces everywhere. And again, this is how the chickens live, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of chickens. So the eggs that they produce are the eggs that we're eating.
Right. And they are eggs, it sounds like, that are coming from absolutely stressed out chickens.
Absolutely stressed out, yeah. Stressed out, tortured, that type of thing. It's not a pretty picture of our, you know, of the way we do some things in this country.
It doesn't sound like a pretty picture at all. You also do a weekly blog, I believe. Is that correct, that you do a weekly blog?
Yes. The name of the blog is called mustlovefoods.com.
Okay. And in your blog, what kinds of things do you talk about? What kind of responses have you gotten?
Oh, we've gotten some really good responses. We have a lot of followers. And I'm basically just talking about whether it's something that's in the news or something that I read. One day it may be about sugar. The next day it may be about vegetables. The next day it may be about calcium and fish oil. I talk about caffeine. Believe it or not, it's good for you on some levels. So I talk about things that interest me and just different articles that I've read in terms of, you know, sort of the spectrum of things related to food and nutrition, and things that, you know, people might not think about, you know, eating different types of rice, for example, and how, you know, this has more antioxidants than this. So again, you don't give up rice, but let's try something else with a little more fiber, a little more color.
All right, a little better for you.
A little better for you.
Or right. Maybe a lot better for you.
Hopefully a lot better for you. And it tastes good.
We've been talking a lot about, so far, meats and sugars, which people kind of, you know that people have lots of thoughts about. But what about salt? I mean, we kind of get, we know that salt is, you know, you're supposed to back off of some of the salt, but are there negative consequences to too much salt? And does salt show up in ways that we wouldn't ordinarily think of?
Well, there's always negative consequences to anything in excess.
Okay.
And so obviously people need to be very mindful about the amount of salt that they eat. But they need to realize that even if you don't have a salt shaker in your home, and you'll be one of those people, oh, I never put salt on my food. If you eat any sort of processed food, it has salt in it. Even there are even vitamins that have salt in them. So you have to read. Again, I'm an advocate of whole foods, so I try to get people to slowly get away from the processed bags and boxes to the whole foods. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, you need to read every single label and look at the salt content, whether it's oatmeal or cookies or soups or sauces or mac and cheese, whatever it might be. Because, yes, that salt is going to impact your blood pressure. It's going to impact the fluid that you retain. High blood pressure can lead to more stress on your heart. More stress on your heart down the road potentially could lead to heart attacks and strokes, especially if you're overweight, you're not exercising, you end up with high cholesterol. So none of this stuff is separate. It's all intertwined.
The idea that you could take a vitamin and it would have salt in it, talk more about that.
Well, in a lot of vitamins, there are plenty of preservatives. And there are, I shouldn't say preservatives and fillers. So you may have people believe that they can take a multivitamin, a one a day, and get everything they need in that one pill. And that pill would really have to be awfully large. But if you look at vitamins that you take over the counter and you read the label, you're going to find that there may be some salt in there. There's a lot of preservatives. So what I tell people, because if you take your vitamin from whatever store you've purchased it and you put one vitamin in a glass of warm water, if it is not completely dissolved in 30 minutes, then that means that the majority of that vitamin is actually preservatives. And it's going in your mouth and then it's just coming out the other end.
Wow.
And so you're really not getting what you need. But one of the things in there may be some salt.
One vitamin and a glass of warm water, if it's not gone in 30 minutes, you've got a problem.
You've got a problem, right. You're not absorbing any of those nutrients, because if it was in your body, the same thing would happen as happening in that glass. And
okay.
If you end up with a solid piece of vitamin in that glass, then you're not absorbing anything, so you're not getting what you need or what you think you're getting.
And you say that the one a day vitamin, it would have to be pretty large for it to really be a one a day vitamin that does what people believe it does. Are you opposed to these one a day vitamins that are being marketed all over the place?
Well, I just don't think that people are getting what they think they're getting.
Okay.
Because that's just really pretty hard to do. I'm much more an advocate of the pack of vitamins. It may be two or three pills. It may be even five pills. But A, they're a little easier to down, and B, they're more concentrated and usually have less fillers.
Okay.
In terms of one a day. And so chances are, you know, if you have one pill that's all calcium and one pill that maybe is all iron and another pill that's all something else, it's much more likely, even if you don't absorb 100%, and I'm sure you won't, it's much more likely that you're getting more of that calcium and that iron than you are in a large pill that says, oh, you just need one of these a day.
Okay. You talk about mindful shopping. You talk about mindful eating. Can you say something more about being mindful in your food purchase and in your food consumption?
Mindful eating is a concept that is really just a matter of focus, like we were talking about before when you mm-hmm. walk into the grocery store. So whether it's shopping or especially with eating, and it's that you pay attention to every single thing that you put in your mouth. You're just very mindful of what you're eating. You need to get away from eating like handfuls of something out of a bag or out of a box, like potato chips or nuts or crackers or things like that, because you really have no idea at the end how much you've eaten. And then you may look and say, oh, wow, half the bag is gone. Mm-hmm. Really? Did I eat? No, I didn't eat that much. I couldn't have eaten that much. But you have no idea because
right.
you've just been reaching in and feeding yourself. So if you pay attention to everything you put in your mouth, and if you stop and think of that, sometimes it may help you to say, oh, I don't really want that cookie. Or I want some cake, but let me just cut that in half and take a couple of bites, as opposed to eating an entire piece of chocolate cake. Now, you don't have to be mindful if you're eating an apple. Eat the whole thing.
Okay.
That's great. you know, same thing with if you have a huge salad, eat the whole thing. That's great. But just be very cognizant of what you put in your mouth. And you'd be surprised if you think about that, and even if you try to keep a diary just for a day, every piece of gum, every little Tic Tac, you'll be surprised at how much you really eat. For those people that say, no, I don't eat that much. I don't snack. I don't eat junk food. You just might be surprised. And it really starts to make you think, and it starts to change the way that you operate, one food at a time.
That's a lot easier than changing your whole world in a day. Which is it,
Absolutely.
Which I think is what a lot of people think about in terms of dieting, certainly, and changing their foods. Nicolette Martin, author of Love What You Eat, Choosing Foods That Will Change Your Life. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
We are continuing the conversation with Dr. Nicolette Martin. Dr. Martin, let's go back to the primary foods that you've identified: love, nurturing, sense of purpose. Again, very often when people think about primary foods, they don't think about the relationships in their lives as being primary. But in fact, you're clearly making the point, and I could not agree with you more, although I might be a little biased, that relationships certainly are the primary ways in which we get fed or not fed. You talk about careers. How is a career one of the primary foods?
Well, your career, I think most people spend more time at work than they do at home. And so if you're in a job or even a career that you don't like, it doesn't feed you, or as you know, some people would say, it's not your gift, it's not your passion. So you get up every morning, you go to work, you punch in, you sit there from 9 to 5, you come home, and then you do it all over again. That's really going to put a drain on you, and it's just going to suck the life energy out of you. And it's hard to get motivated to do anything if you're that miserable for 8 to 10 hours a day. Then you're going to want to come home and eat a big salad and go for a run.
Not so much.
That's just probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
So, again, easier said than done, like you've mentioned before. I'm not advocating that everybody just quit their job if they hate it. But if you can't leave your job, then you try to change things with, you know, to the best of your ability within the job to make it more palatable to you. If you can do some things on the side, maybe to help you build a different career and, you know, your passion outside of your quote-unquote 9 to 5, anything that gets you excited, that makes you feel better about yourself, will lead to an overall better feeling, a better energy. And then you'll say, you know, now I need more energy to start this business, and I got to feel good, and I got to be able to sleep well and get up and be refreshed so I can go do this after my 9 to 5. So whatever changes you can make, that's what you need to try to do step by step.
So it sounds like the more honest an investment you make in your relationships, including career and finances, etc., the more honest that investment, the easier it is for you to actually change the foods that really do change your life.
Yes, because if you feel better in those aspects, you're absolutely right. It's much easier. The food part will come. But if there's more psychological and physiological and mental overlay that's keeping you from getting to the changing of the food part, then that for some reason is always going to be last on the list. And I'll start my diet January 1st, or I'll start after this trip, or I'll start after this project. You know, I'm going to smoke less after this project because I'm just so stressed. But if you can start to learn to control stress, because everybody has it and you can't get rid of it,
right,
and you can rein it in, and then you start to make changes in those primary aspects, then chances are the food part and the food changing will come, and it'll actually be a little easier.
You add finances, as I said before, as one of the primary foods. How do you think about finances as a primary food?
I think everybody, to some extent, on some level, is stressed about money.
Okay.
And we're a capitalist society. That's just who we are. But again, if you're worried about, I have to work 2 jobs to make ends meet, or I have to buy this new X, or I have to have those new boots, you know, that type of thing. If you're always, again, stressed about money, if you're always focused just about your finances, whether it's because you don't have enough, or you can't figure out where to spend all that you have, that's going to take a psychological toll on you. And that's going to start wearing on your energy and start wearing on your focus. And so you're focusing on something outside of yourself as opposed to, you know, now how is that really healthy for me?
Mm.
And that doesn't mean, you know, that you shouldn't want to have nice things or that you shouldn't buy nice things. But again, if that's your main focus, then taking care of you falls to the wayside.
You also add physical activity as one of the primary foods. And, you know, you and I both know that there are people listening who say, physical activity, exercise, really? Do I have to?
And the answer is yes, you have to.
So much for that.
There's no way around it. But once you start, I promise you, no matter where you start, you will feel better once you get started. Now, it's a step-by-step process. If you haven't exercised in 10 years, then going out and trying to run and then coming home and saying, oh, everything hurts, I'm never doing that again, would probably not be a good idea.
Yeah, not the best plan. Okay.
Make a plan. I'm going to go for a 10-minute walk today. Just walk. It's the easiest thing to do. It's inexpensive, because all you have to do is put on a shoes. You don't have to go to a gym, no equipment. Just walk. There are hundreds of exercise programs on TV. If you're someone that has, you know, it's winter outside, you can't get outside, you can exercise in your home. You don't need a gym membership. You don't need to buy anything. People who have disabilities can exercise from a chair.
Mm-hmm.
You can do exercises sitting in a chair. But you have to move your body parts if you want them to get stronger, if you want them to get healthy. So at the end of the day, yes, the answer is yes.
So much for that. You also include spiritual health as part of a primary food. What are you saying when you say that? What are you talking about?
Well, different people have different definitions of spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And mine is personally religious. And I'm a Christian. But even if yours is not, whether it's a different type of religion, whether it's meditation, you need to be grounded in something. And you need to understand that there is something more than you. And I think really that takes a lot of pressure off of people. If you stop and think there's something more than me, there's something bigger, more powerful than me. And if you have the opportunity, or rather the attitude that, you know, I'm here to be the best me that I can be, not the best person on TV, not the best athlete that I saw. I'm here to be the best me, and whatever my higher power is, I'm going to tap into that to help me do it.
So it's sort of a rounding out, if you will, of your personal relationships.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it gives you, I think it gives you a different type of energy. It gives you a different type of focus on life and your position in life. It gives you a different strength.
There are some tips that you give. Well, there are many tips that you give in the book, but one of them that I thought was really interesting was when you say if you're tired, you might actually be dehydrated, and drinking a cup of coffee, probably not the best thing. Maybe drinking water would be better.
Right. There's a lot of reasons why people are tired and sluggish. So if we assume it's not because you just ate a half a box of candy, and we assume it's not because you only got 2 hours of sleep, it's very possible that when you are dehydrated, you can get headaches, you can get blurred vision, you could feel sluggish. There's a lot of things going on that a glass of water can cure. And drinking that cup of coffee will give you maybe an immediate spark, but then you're going to end up being even more dehydrated because caffeine works on your kidneys and it will cause you to urinate whatever water you have in you out. So a couple of glasses of water, maybe some herbal tea, something without caffeine, just to get you moving. And yeah, you'd be surprised if that can actually just wake you up and get you going again.
And when you say water, does it have to be the $5 a bottle water, or can it just be water?
It can just be water.
Okay.
Absolutely.
These waters that have all the so-called the vitamins and all of that stuff inputted, what's your thought about that? Are they useful, or is it a waste of money?
No, I think the jury may still be out on that. I haven't really seen any research to substantiate that the waters with the extra vitamins and the enzymes and things like that are really very helpful. I haven't seen anything to really corroborate that. So
okay.
I'm not sure that's the best use of your money.
And you also say that one should stay away from low-fat or diet foods. But there's... I mean, the market for low-fat foods is huge. You're saying low-fat means more sugar?
Well, absolutely. Again, that's those million-dollar marketers who say, oh, people in America, people all over the world want to lose weight. We have to find a hook. Oh, we'll make this low-fat, because for a while we were saying that fat was the culprit and eating fat will make you fat. So they jumped on the bandwagon, we'll make everything low-fat. But in order for it to be low-fat and still taste good, they have to put something else in it, otherwise you wouldn't eat it.
Right.
So we add more sugar.
Well, you've just ruined my low-fat yogurt. I just want you to know that. It is now ruined. Folks, we have been talking to, you have been listening to, you and I have been listening to Dr. Nicolette Martin, who is the author of Love What You Eat, Choosing Foods That Will Change Your Life. Dr. Martin, how can people follow your work and be in touch?
They can check on my website, which is up and coming, actually. It's called mustlovefoods.com.
Okay.
I also have a Facebook page under that name and a Twitter account at mustlovefoods.com. My blog is mustlovefoods@wordpress.com. The book is available on Amazon in both the softcover and the Kindle.
So there are lots of ways for people to be in touch and follow your work.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
You are actually located in the Washington, D.C. area. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
That's wonderful. All right. Dr. Nicolette Martin, thank you so much for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Bisley. It's been such a pleasure.
Well, it's been fun to have you, and certainly you've helped us look at the other side of what impacts or what can impact one's mental health. And to you, the listener, I thank you for listening to this edition of Mind Talk. You can also listen to Mind Talk on demand whenever you like at mindtalk.org. That's MYNDTALK.ORG. The managing producer is Jim Brown in 26x2 Communications. Our social media coordinator, Courtney Ebel, thank you very much for your help. Mind Talk is provided daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace treatment with a licensed medical or mental health professional. If you would like to be in touch with me directly, that number is 301-654-5286. But the best way is to go to mindtalk.org. You can sign up to be on the email list, listen to all kinds of programs. That, again, that's MYNDTALK.ORG. And folks, always remember, if it's unacceptable, it's unacceptable. Take care.